Hi, guys. Here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil, like a lot of it. Yep, that's good. Then I stare at a red light. It's the kind that helps your cells positively glow. Oh, wow, really bright. Okay. Next, I take an ice bath. That's how you melt your fat and fix your, I don't know, other stuff. Ooh, yep, feeling super healthy. Can't feel my toes. Breakfast is raw liver. Okay, here we go. Oh, real good.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads, no fear, just your signal. Get $10 off select plans at cygnos.com. That's Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
In all the previous cases that I've been involved with, where the situation is like this here, it's always been a recovery. It's never been a
please God,
happy ending.
Bring her home.
You will start to question whether a memory is real or false only when that element of memory or that
why did his father leave him in a ditch in the middle of nowhere, then lie about it and disappear?
From eye scrapings and evasive nose probings to incisions in the skin, John of God has performed countless unlicensed surgical procedures, seemingly with no anesthesia.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, the Evangelical Takeover Edition. Before the darkest of cases we will be covering in the following weeks. Like I said at the end of last episode, I'm covering the story of a serial killer who grew up in various cult-y religions, and who has managed to scare me more than any other serial killer I have ever heard about, any other person for that matter. And that's for two reasons. Number one, he was anywhere and everywhere. And two, it hits really freaking close to home. So buckle up, guys. You get one more church scandal, terrifying in its own right. And then I guarantee you, you will feel the same way I do about the upcoming case, because it's quite possible it might just hit close to home for you too. But now for a tale of a royal televangelist family. Life, liberty, and the fall of the Falwells. It sounds a little too much like an episode of Desperate Housewives. Sex, lies, videotape, and an affair with a pool boy? Throw in some politicians, even a former president, a famous fixer, and a televangelist father and a prestigious Christian university. I mean, what could go wrong? To begin, we need to discuss the history of this famous or infamous evangelical family, as well as the history of the institution known as Liberty University. All of that backstory is so pertinent to understand why this lust-filled scandal is so ironic. This is a sordid tale with some very odd and unexpected twists and turns. It starts with Jerry Falwell Sr. I know we covered him a bit in season one in relation to the Jim and Tammy Faye Baker scandal and his takedown of their PTL ministry. For those not familiar with the Senior Falwell, here's a brief history of the famous televangelist. May he rest in peace. Before he became the televangelist we know today, Jerry Falwell Sr. was an engineering student, just drinking and partying with his friends. And believe it or not, he was also a member of a teenage posse in Lynchburg called the Wall Gang that would fight rival crews. And knowing what I know about the man, I find that really hard to picture. He allegedly found the Lord after visiting a Baptist church when he fell in love with the church's piano player, Maisel. He flat out joined the congregation just to date her. Even though she was engaged to someone else. It's scandalous, but it's kind of sweet. Shortly thereafter, in the mid-1950s, the love-struck young man founded Thomas Road Baptist Church, at the young age of 22. Jerry then became a prominent Protestant evangelist in the middle of the 20th century and also founded what would become Liberty University in 1971. It is surprising Falwell went down the path of religion, though, considering he came from a crowd of rebel-rousers, bootleggers, atheists, and drug addicts. His grandfather and uncle distilled and distributed whiskey during Prohibition and even owned a hotel where they kept a bear chained up for drunk tourists to wrestle with. Yes, a bear. I mean, I kind of want to hang with these guys. But old Jerry was a different case. The apple fell very far from the tree. His fundamentalist views and interpretation of the Bible eventually made their way onto television screens with his popular old-time Gospel Hour TV show. He was extremely conservative and encouraged his followers to become involved in politics, founding what would be called the Moral Majority, a political organization for the promotion of conservative social values. The Moral Majority quickly grew to several million members and played a vital role in getting Ronald Reagan a seat in the Oval Office. One of Jerry's famous sayings at the time was, quote, "The idea that religion and politics don't mix was invented by the devil to keep Christians from running their own country." The organization was focused on pro-family, pro-Israel, and pro-American values, apparently just what our country was craving at the time. They were able to register millions of new voters to get their chosen candidate elected into office. And this is before social media. Jerry Sr. was also quite famous for his toxic tongue, once stating outlandish beliefs, including statements that, quote, "Billy Graham is the chief servant of Satan in America," and that, quote, "AIDS is not just God's punishment for homosexuals. It is God's punishment for the society that tolerates homosexuals," end quote. Ew, ew, ew. He also blamed the attacks of 9/11 on gays, lesbians, feminists, abortion, doctors, and the ACLU. Wow. Gangs all here. He said, quote, "I point the finger in their faces and say, you helped this happen." He actually stated this on TV days after the horrific event unfolded. And here's a clip of him saying that.
"This is the first time that we've been attacked on our soil. First time, and by far the worst results. And I fear, as Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, said yesterday, that this is only the beginning. And with biological warfare available to these monsters, the Husseins, the Bin Ladens, the Arafats, what we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if in fact God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve."
Well, Jerry, that's my feeling. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population.
The ACLU's got to take a lot of blame for this.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I'll hear from them for this, but throwing God off successfully with the help of the federal court system, throwing God out of the public square, out of the schools, the abortionists have got to bear some burden for this, because God will not be mocked. And when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Well, I totally concur.
So obviously this man was not without his own controversies. But that is not the focus of this series, believe it or not. Jerry and wife Maisel became parents to Jerry Jr., Jonathan, and Jeannie. And maybe even to a fourth baby, Jerry's beloved Liberty University, which was created due to Jerry Sr.'s passion to be a Christian educator. It says on the school's own website that, quote, "His heartbeat was to train young champions for Christ in every walk of life." What started as a tiny school of 154 students has grown behind the late founder's wildest dreams. His goal was to have 50,000 students attend the university, and today, more than 15,000 students attend class on campus, while another nearly 100,000 from 85 different countries take courses through Liberty University Online. The school is known for its traditional Christian teachings and values, and is one of the most conservative schools in the United States. It is also known for an insanely restrictive honor code, known as the Liberty Way, that as recently as 2014 would fine students $10 if they were seen holding hands. The horror. My God, I can't believe I'm clutching my pearls. The list of restrictions in place for students when they're on or off campus, yes, even when they're away on vacation with family or friends during a school break, rules apply, my friends. The Falwell's Lord is always watching. But I suppose if you have to sign on the dotted line agreeing to the rules, I guess you know what you're getting yourself into. But here are just a few casual examples I found on the Liberty EDU website. First one, Liberty University maintains a conservative standard in its approach to the arts and entertainment, media and entertainment that is inconsistent with Liberty standards and traditions, i.e. lewd lyrics, anti-Christian message, sexual content, nudity, pornography, etc., are not permitted on or off campus. Listen, that's light. It gets worse. Then, sexual relations outside of a biblically ordained marriage between a natural-born man, gotta specify that, and a natural-born woman, seems like there could be a workaround though, but whatever, are not permissible at Liberty University. Hairstyles and fashion should avoid extremes. Students must dress modestly and appropriately at all times. Earrings and plugs may be worn in ears, and small studs may be worn in the nose. No other facial jewelry is permitted. Now, I gotta be honest, the nose ring and plug thing seems pretty progressive and lackadaisical compared to what's next. Students can't wear shorts to class. Female students must wear modest, one-piece swimsuit, not a bikini in sight, even if vacationing halfway around the world. I swear to God, if I see one cutout swimsuit on a girl, Father Jerry will know. He's got like a sixth sense about that. Just if you see one rib, one side of a stomach. I mean, in my case, I used to wear like a front cutout that showed my belly button and a bulge or whatever. It doesn't matter. The current honor code student packet is 22 pages long. It also details the appeals process for violations and explains possible sanctions, which could include loss of funding, deactivation. What does that even mean? That sounds alienish. Warning, written apology, failing grade, monetary penalties, restrictions of students' rights and privileges, recovery program, removal of university housing, dismissal, campus ban. The list goes on and on. There is a point, fine, and community service system in place to, quote, reinforce the principles of the Student Honor Code. For example, 4 points and a $10 fine are given for a dress code violation, curfew violation, inappropriate personal conduct, that's very vague, among several other interactions. A $25 fine and 6 points are given for gambling, vaping on campus, possession of tobacco, or attending a dance. That's right. Apparently that's forbidden as well. It's essentially the plot of Footloose. Just think of it like that. 12 points or $50 for deception. Minor violations like being alone with a member of the opposite sex, even at an off-campus residence. Again, the Lord has an omnipresent Ring security camera on you at all times. If you want to see what you can get away with for $250, $500, and beyond, I encourage you to read the document online at Liberty.edu. It's a lot. Even for Kate, who went to a similar Christian institution and would get fined for swearing, I would be in debt if that was the case. Fuck. It's terrible. I hate myself. Sorry. It wasn't funny. Sorry, it wasn't funny. let me tell you about the latest true crime podcast that I have been binging. Morning Cup of Murder. You remember those desktop calendars that would tell you about what happened on that day in history? Well, Morning Cup of Murder took that idea and turned it into a daily podcast that now has over 850 episodes that dive into serial killers, cults, and cold cases, murders, and more. Morning Cup of Murder is the best way to start your day because each episode is less than 10 minutes long, so it is perfect to listen to while having that first cup of coffee or tea in the morning. Morning Cup of Murder can be heard everywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out Morning Cup of Murder today. You won't regret it. We had the opportunity to speak to a former Liberty University student who would like to be known as Rebecca. She had this to say about her experience.
No, you sat with your dorm, like you'd sit with your floor of your dorm, and the RAs would take attendance, and you had to be there.
You couldn't miss.
No, it was not optional. One semester I lived off campus, and if you're off campus, you're supposed to be there, but no one checks anything, so I never went. It was like, why? I could go. Who cares? Especially if I wasn't on campus, you know, that time or whatever. It's like, no. You know, premarital sex was a major thing. I mean, you weren't supposed to do more than hold hands or kiss on the lips. The loudest thing was that if you got pregnant and you kept the pregnancy, you were expelled from school, period. If you got pregnant and had an abortion, you were suspended for one semester.
Wow.
So we used to always, I mean, it's not funny, but it's like, wait, so if you get pregnant and you have an abortion, that's okay. You just have to take a semester off. But if you have a baby, you're done.
Quite the double standard. That's crazy.
Right. And we thought it was funny, too, because they had the Liberty Godparent Home, which was, home for unwed mothers. I'm sure it's still around, even though it's pretty outdated, but it was very much like, you know, the fallen woman kind of thing. And they would all sit together at Thomas Road and, you know, kind of shuffle in and out together.
Yeah.
But the babies were always given up for adoption if you went to the godparent home. No.
Okay.
He ruled until he passed away.
I love that you say ruled. That's very telling.
I mean, he was cool, though. I mean, I didn't have anything to worry about with him, but you kind of knew if you saw the Suburban rolling towards you, that was Doc, and you got out of the way because he really didn't stop. It's legit truth. He did not stop. It was, I can't remember, black or gray Suburban, and if you saw it rolling towards you with his shock of white hair, man, you just kind of go for the sidewalk. It was something that was taken very seriously. You know, they would tell parents when they brought the kids at the beginning of the year, you know, we joke, but it's true. It's the Liberty Way or the Trailway bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you comply or you can't stay because this is what is expected of everyone. And if you can't uphold it, I mean, people left, definitely. You know, people were expelled for, you know, there was some stalking and there were some mm-hmm. domestic violence cases. When it happens when you have that many people.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be bad people everywhere. But, I mean, there were staff allegations of different things from time to time. And they handled it very seriously. Most of it was fairly hush-hush and rumored. But there was a case of a student pastor. And he was eventually removed from the university. And his parents both taught at the university also. So, I mean, they didn't play around. It didn't matter who you were, you know, this is the rule. And when Doc was in charge, that was that, you know, this is what it was held to. He still held to the strict old school Jerry Falwell senior kind of mentality. You know, mm-hmm. that's kind of gone to the side quite a bit in the last 20 years. But I never had alcohol until I went to Liberty. I know, such a bad girl. But what was funny was we were friends with a member of staff who showed us some, you know, kind of off the beaten path places, or we'd just hang out at people's apartments.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it wasn't anything bad. We weren't, you know, drinking to excess because we still had to be able to drive back to the dorms.
Yeah.
You know, and no one was really drinking and driving. You know, you have a drink or two, but it wasn't anything excessive because we were terrified to get caught. I forgot one of the big infractions was if you went to an R-rated movie, that was a big no-no.
One of the most satisfying things to me is reorganizing and purging clothes out of my closet, creating a cleaner, refreshed space. And I get that same satisfaction and, well, also a confidence boost when I use Way's Clarifying Detox Shampoo. There's nothing more refreshing than hitting the reset button once in a while. And if your hair is a little overdue for the same treatment, it's time for the Clarifying Detox Shampoo from Way. So I've been trying out hairstyle options on myself before I go to my hair and makeup trial so I can give them an idea. And let's just say I'm not the most skilled at hair. The failed attempts at updos with way too much hairspray, teasing, dry shampoo, you name it, has made my hair a little blah. So I turned to Way's Detox Shampoo, and my hair is back to its natural luster and shine. And, I mean, all of our hair can take a lot of experimentation and sometimes outright neglect. Like I said, it's never too late to hit the reset button with their detox shampoo. And even if you haven't attempted a Dolly Parton bouffant recently like I have, the detox shampoo is an amazing way to just refresh and get that body and bounce back. And you can use it once a week to neutralize product buildup, oil, dirt, and hard water from your hair, scalp without stripping away moisture. Guys, you must try it. So when you're ready to undo some damage, hit the reset button with the Way Detox Shampoo. Go to theway.com, that's theouai.com, and use code SINNERS to get 15% off your entire purchase. That's theway.com, code SINNERS. Link will be in the show notes. What is perhaps most ironic about this lengthy list of do's and don'ts is that there is no separate honor code for staff. It seems as though when Jerry Sr. was at the helm, staff were held to the same standards of ethics as students. But when Jerry Jr. took over, well, everything changed. He marched to the beat of his own drum. And that is where the hypocrisy of the prominent Falwell family, Jerry Jr. in particular, shines brighter than the sun. Jerry Falwell Jr. is the eldest son of Jerry Sr. and Maycel Falwell, and was born June 17, 1962. Brother Jonathan was born 2 years later, and his sister, Jeannie, 2 years after that. He attended private schools throughout his youth, including his father's Lynchburg Christian Academy, later known as Liberty Christian Academy, and graduated in 1980. In an interview with Vanity Fair, Jerry described his childhood in a way that makes me think he played a bit of a black sheep role in his family and admitted he, quote, never made much use for his father's church anyway. All right, well, that's one way to ostracize yourself from the fray. Jerry recalled he and his brother's relationship as competitive, where their father's affection and attention was concerned, and that his brother always tried to copy whatever Jerry was doing. Imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. Jerry considered himself to be the wild, rebellious one, while Jonathan was the type to always follow the rules. They were different as night and day. He told Vanity Fair that he was closest with his dad. Quote, my dad and I were thick as thieves. And that they loved playing pranks on people, like the time his father put a baby alligator in his wife's bathtub, or the time he threw roadkill inside a friend's passing-by car. Jerry Sr.'s antics even involved scaring Liberty University students by speeding his SUV all over campus grounds and sidewalks, which led to his son to purchase his father a train horn to warn unsuspecting students he was coming, saving the family from potential lawsuits if he were to run anybody over. In the 1970s, teenage Jerry remembered flying with his celebrity televangelist father all over the country so Jerry could preach and spew his anti-Satan, pro-America rhetoric from sea to shining sea. Jerry, meanwhile, would stand in the back of packed auditoriums, selling his father's books and records, while lining his own pockets with cash. He also recalled his parents' rocky marriage. And since divorce and alcohol weren't an option in their home for his jet-setting father, sometimes he would settle for a bottle of NyQuil to take the edge off. Quote, "He called it Baptist wine," Jerry Jr. recalled. But no one needed to know what was or wasn't happening behind closed doors. Something Jerry Jr. would take mental note of. During his time at Liberty, Jerry Jr. was a rule breaker. So it's unsurprising that when he enrolled at his father's college in 1980, he scoffed at the Liberty way and found ways to bend the rules. During his freshman year, for example, he and one of his friends snuck off campus to chug a few beers at a convenience store. He wanted people to see him as the good pastor's kid while lusting after a life that was forbidden to him. But he found a way around it. Yet in spite of his rebellious ways, pursuing a religious studies degree taught him what he really believed. And he said he became a true Christian in college. Though not a strict fundamentalist like his mother or an evangelical rule follower like his father, he told Vanity Fair that because Jesus was a rule breaker too, his belief was that, quote, "organized religion says that you have to earn your way to heaven. What Jesus said was, you just have to believe." When Jerry graduated from Liberty with a Bachelor of Arts in History and Religious Studies in 1984, he began attending the University of Virginia School of Law 70 miles away. He found freedom living away from home. He did whatever he wanted. Happy hours, basketball, hanging out with friends. He enjoyed life and never bothered to find a church. Good for him. Fine. And then he met Becky Tilley on one fateful trip home. She was a freshman at Liberty University. He whisked her off her feet on their first date, an R-rated Terminator movie. The scandal. They fell in love, and I wish I could say the rest is history, but the scandal had only just begun. Mother Maisel didn't approve of the relationship. Becky dropped out of college and got a waitressing job. She would sleep over at Jerry's on her days off. Jerry Sr. loved Becky and was happy for them. And in the end, love won. In spite of his mother's objections, Jerry and Becky were married in 1987. They settled in the shadows of the Blue Ridge Mountains on a farm. They portrayed the simple life well. Jerry wanted to become a lawyer, and he did. From 1987 to 2007, Jerry Jr. served in private practice in Virginia and then became the lawyer for Liberty University. His lawyer chops were tested in the summer of 1988 when Jerry Sr. revealed to his son that Liberty was on the edge of bankruptcy. Though to the public eye, it seemed the school was thriving. Behind the scenes, though, millions of dollars had been borrowed to finance endless school expansions, and the debt threatened to cost the Falwells not only the university, but their church and TV show as well. Jerry Jr. took on what he thought would be a part-time job in an office down the hall from his father, until he saw how dire the situation really was. The pair became an inseparable duo, known on campus as Big Jerry and Little Jerry. And Little Jerry's efforts paid off. He was able to stabilize the school's financial situation and save it from sale or closure. More and more work was being delegated in Jerry Jr.'s direction, and late into Jerry Sr.'s life, he sat his two sons down and explained that he wanted to divide his empire in half. Jonathan, then pastor, would inherit his church. Jerry Jr. was set to inherit Liberty, leaving Surgeon Genie out of the fold. Jerry Sr. was healthy at the time. Jerry Jr. thought he had a lot of time for it to get all sorted out, but a few short years later, his father suffered a fatal heart attack at his desk, and the former rebellious Liberty student became their leader. If he didn't want the job, why did he accept it? Why did it have to be passed down to the next generation, Many employees of the university expected Jonathan to pick up the role because of his pastoral sensitivities and training, not the older brother who they said couldn't complete a sentence in person. Jerry had a passion for politics, not a passion for the church. Jonathan did play a similar role within the university to, quote, make sure liberty kept its compass. In 2008, he was appointed as the school's vice chancellor for spiritual affairs, upholding the integrity of the university and advising his brother on matters of faith. Becky didn't like that and pushed to shrink the middle brother's role, attempting to consolidate the power to her and her husband. Regardless if he wanted the role or not, he was thrust into it. But Jerry and Becky stepped into the bright spotlight and soaked up the attention. And Jerry wrestled with the vastly rebellious parts of himself becoming so exposed, quote, because of my last name, people think I'm a religious person, but I'm not. My goal was to make them realize I was not my dad. And this is what he told Vanity Fair. The couple faked it until they made it, enjoying the added perks that being president of the institution had at their fingertips, a private jet, luxurious vacations with their big donors, continuing to lust after the good life and all that came with it. And I'll admit that Jerry had some good ideas and did get Liberty's wildly successful distance learning program off the ground and running, and Becky, meanwhile, was glad to leave behind her mundane life of raising the couple's three children. She was in her early 40s. She wanted a whole new look, a new wardrobe, a personal trainer. I don't blame her with all that media attention. She revealed to Vanity Fair that suddenly, boys on Liberty's campus were paying her attention. And that attention was lacking at home with Jerry. He was gone all the time. She said, quote, they were giving me attention I'd never gotten before. And we will soon find how much Mrs. Falwell enjoyed the attention from the opposite sex.
Want to try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
You only eat after you're walking 10,000 steps.
Stop it! They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Signos.com. Signos.com with code SPARK. Signos.
Does your skin need a midwinter refresh? Well, then look no further than Thrive Cosmetics. I am obsessed with their overnight sensation and the Defying Gravity Eye Lifting Cream, especially because my skin is still adjusting to a cold, dry climate in Colorado, and I need these miracle products. The Overnight Sensation is a brightening sleep mask that truly works magic. You put it on at night, and it's not visible, so you won't terrify your partner with like a blue mask or something. And then you rinse it off in the morning, and you basically turn back the clock with beautiful, glowing skin. I am not joking. It's a potent, skin-loving formula that restores, hydrates, and rejuvenates your skin overnight. It's antioxidant-packed, spa-inspired mask for smoother, brighter, more hydrated skin. And that's what we need in the winter. Well, actually, all year round. And the Defying Gravity Eye Lifting Cream, oh, it's amazing. It smooths any fine lines by hydrating and, again, turning back the clock. It softens and soothes and deeply moisturizes skin while instantly reducing dark circles and puffiness. And it fights signs of stress, aging, and dullness. It's like beauty sleep in a bottle. And I've tried every skincare product out there, and nothing compares to the Overnight Sensation Mask and Eye Lifting Cream, I'm telling you. And when it comes to their makeup, I'm also devoted to these products. I'm obsessed with their Brilliant Eye Brightener. I have it in three different shades for whatever mood I'm in. I use it for an all-over shadow and a highlighter for the corner of my eyes. It's a cream-to-powder highlighter stick that brightens and opens eyes, giving you an instant eye lift. And who doesn't want that? It helps you look like you've had plenty of restful sleep, even if you haven't, which I need today. I'm going to be slapping that on. And it gives the perfect wash of color and glow, a vibrant, well-rested look in 13 shimmering shades. I also like that Thrive Cosmetics isn't just about the product. No, they have a bigger-than-beauty mission. So for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help women thrive. women emerging from homelessness, surviving domestic abuse, fighting cancer, and more. And one of the partners I really like is their Foundation for Women Warriors. It focuses its mission on empowering women veterans to re-enter civilian life. And through the partnership with Thrive, they make products available as a resource for these women who are receiving supportive services from FFWW. Because many of these women are embarking on new careers and they benefit from access to professional accessories like high-quality makeup, which can help them transition into their new role with confidence, and they deserve that. And now is a great time to try Thrive Cosmetics for yourself. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order when you visit thrivecosmetics.com/sinners. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/sinners for 15% off your first order. Staff at the college had their own views of Becky. One longtime Liberty official told Politico, quote, "Until Big Jerry died, you wouldn't have known Becky if she walked up and slapped you in the face." And then Big Jerry dies, and all of a sudden, if you're walking down the hall and you didn't greet her right, you're fired. Things were beginning to go off the rails. According to Politico, quote, "Liberty employees detailed other instances of Falwell's behavior that they see as falling short of the standard of conduct they expect from conservative Christian leaders, from partying at nightclubs, to graphically discussing his sex life with employees, to electioneering." Yeah, Jerry Jr. is suggested to have played a role in manipulating online polls in Trump's favor in the run-up to Trump's presidential campaign, according to the Wall Street Journal. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, this is a very sordid tale with more twists and turns than I can count. And that is when things started getting a little sticky, and maybe even a little icky, with a hotel pool boy in Miami Beach. The troubles for the Falwell family were only just the beginning. And that is what we will cover in next week's episode. So buckle up. It gets real weird, real quick. And I know I said the real dark one was coming next week. We got to do a part two on the Falwell scandal. So after that, get ready for some horror. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoy the show, the best thing you can do is to leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts. And I just love you guys. Thank you. Bye.
Seven Deadly Sinners was written and created by Rachel O'Brien. Research and writing assistance by Kate Codman. Sound design and music production by Greg Hunter. This week's episode features music by Vinyl Fields. And produced by Rachel O'Brien and Greg Hunter.